Learn how to fast-track your startup fundraising with J.D. Davids.
So if I give you $1 million today, what are you going to do with it? Build your company, help it grow. More specifically, sales, marketing, right? What else? Hire. That's what I'm looking for. You're going to build your team, right? Because the idea of one mad scientist in the back who's going to create a better mousetrap and the world is going to beat a path to your door is bullshit. It doesn't happen, right? And people are like, oh yeah, but I'm the next Steve Jobs. And like, he didn't ask his customers, you know, if they needed an iPod or whatever. It's like, do you know what the marketing budget was when he launched the iPod, right? How many ads did he have on television in order for there to be 50 people lined up outside of the Apple store to buy it? Yes, he's a brilliant product engineer, and he has sales and marketing, right? So it's really important to make sure that you are understanding. You mentioned R&D, right? There's two categories of investments for early stage investors, right? There's the R&D investment where I'm going to pay you to develop your product that you described for me. And then there's a sales and marketing investment that says you've already got a product, you've already sold X number of units, I can already see, and you guys have a hockey stick, right? You're going to show me a hockey stick, right? And the definition of customer traction is, have you started? How far down that line have you gone, right? And if you've gone a few months into it, right, and I can actually see that traction, then the whole idea is, okay, well, if I give you $100,000 and you go hire 5 salespeople, how long will it take for them to make that hockey stick go from here to here, right? Two different categories, R&D and building your sales and marketing channel, right? They have two very different risk characteristics. That's why valuation is very sensitive, because if you ask me for an investment in your company and you're going to put a lot of that money into developing a product, then my risk is here, right? If you've already sold 1,000 units and the month before you sold 500, then for me as an investor, my risk is here. So it's all about risk and reward. That's what fundraising is all about. So the more you understand that, put on your investor hat. Think like they do. That's how you get a check, right? So we already talked about why it sucks. And I've been there and done that before. I started in this business in the early 90s. I've been chief financial officer of 8 different startup companies, and I've been down this road. I've pitched those people that didn't understand the business, and I actually had multiple board meetings where we got the wrong investors, and we literally had to explain. It's like, well, you know, I'm not really like, now who's our customer? And I'm like, dude, like, you're slowing us down. It doesn't work, right? The first thing that's important is to make sure that you have alignment, right? That you and your investors are on the same page in terms of what is the end game. It's like, yes, I know you need money right now, but fast forward the tape, right? Show me what success looks like in 4 or 5 years from now. And let's make sure that we're all on the same page, because if we're not, it's going to be some really, really difficult board meetings, right? Really painful phone conversations that are going to happen. So there's several categories, right? Are you the next billion-dollar IPO? And if you're in the San Francisco marketplace, I actually travel all over the world and have these conversations, and I have to tell you that the Bay Area has a very unique perspective. It's like, if you're not the next billion-dollar IPO, they really don't have a lot of time for you. So this is why it's important to understand your investor, to pitch the right investor, right? Because there's a whole bunch of investors outside of Silicon Valley that are not necessarily looking for the next billion-dollar IPO, and we're going to talk about that, right? Linda Weinman from lynda.com, she bootstrapped it for a long time, right? She didn't want to do a billion-dollar IPO because she understands what that does to businesses. She understands that it changes the frame of your decision-making because you're a slave to the quarterly earnings report. So she said, no, I'm going to keep it private for a long, long time. And she got really, really big, $1.5 billion acquisition to LinkedIn. That's a pretty good success story, right? So you're going to go public or you're going to sell it. Or are you going to be the CEO forever? Who's this? Craig Newmark from Craigslist. Never went public, never sold his company, but yet he's got 20 billion page views a month. Is that success? Absolutely. $700 million in estimated revenues. I don't know how much money he makes, but at some point it's not about the money, right? Does that make sense? So those are the three options. So make sure that when you sit down with investors that you're aligned, right? You're on the same page. that you understand that you're all going to do the same thing, right? Like, we're all going for the billion-dollar IPO. That's the deal, right? Or we're going to build this company up and we're going to sell it in 3 to 5 years, right? Or I'm going to run this thing forever and I don't want to give you very much equity because I want to keep control of the company. Okay, well, just tell them that up front, right? And just keep looking for investors that fit that profile. But the problem is 85% of the deals fail. And nobody wants to talk about this. But I want to talk about it because I've been on that side of the coin. I've been very blessed with success, but I've also had the experience of failure. I know what it feels like to shut down the lights and to tell all your friends that you're going to have to lay them off and shut down the payroll, do the final tax return and all that kind of stuff. It's painful, right? And the reason I share that, the reason I want to talk about what failure looks like is because I don't want you to fail. I want all of you to be successful. And there's been lessons learned for the last 25 years, and there's no reason why you have to repeat the same mistakes that other people have experienced of myself and a lot of other people who've been down this road. So the question is, how do you beat the odds? How do you become in the elite 15% category that actually gets a return on your sweat equity and a return for your investors' cash? And so, as I mentioned, I have been blessed with success. 8 startup companies I was on the management team of, 3 of them went public, 3 of them got acquired, and 2 of them were learning opportunities. And I think it's okay to talk about failure. It's important to talk about failure because experience does not teach anybody anything. Examined experience teaches us something. Did we learn something? And I definitely learned some lessons. I'm going to share those with you today. Here's some of the specific deals that I worked on. Really blessed to be able to participate in those things. I started my career as a CPA at KPMG Pete Marwick. And I'm a proud graduate of the Ohio State University. And I also spent 4 years active duty in the United States Marine Corps. And what's interesting is that I learned a lot about strategy in the Marine Corps. Because if you have a slide that says, we're going to go in and we're going to capture X percent market share, you're going into a battlefield. And you have competitors who could be called enemies, right? Not really enemies, but they're competitors, right? So before you march into the Korangal Valley in Afghanistan, you darn well better do your homework and know where the good guys are and where the bad guys are. And you better know the last time that the supply truck went to that depot over there, because then we can estimate how much ammo they have and how much food they have. Because if I march into that valley with my team of people and we're going to shoot them all up and put the flag on the top of the hill and I don't do my homework first, somebody's going to die. Somebody's going to get shot. And in this case, the same thing is true for strategy of a business. 85% die. So who's going to win? The people who do a little bit of strategy up front. And that's what we're going to talk about. That alignment between your board members, your investors, and your founders and your team is absolutely critical, because for 25 years, if there's one thing that I've learned, it makes the difference between the 15% and the 85%, and that is having the right team. And it starts with having the right investors, which means the right people in the boardroom, and having the right executive team, because you can have the best idea in the world, you can have the best product in the world, but I've actually seen multiple experiences where you have one person who has to be the smartest person in the room. And that will kill a company faster than anything else. You have to work together as a team. And if you don't have this alignment, and that's why I want to encourage you to get that very upfront. Now, I'm kind of hitting it with a sledgehammer, but there's 2 fundraising approaches that most people use, right? Pitch fest competitions. How many people have been already pitched a pitch fest competition? Okay, so start there. I definitely encourage you to do that, but be very selective, right? Try not to do the ones that charge you thousands of dollars to pitch. I don't believe in pay to pitch personally, but there are cases where it's appropriate. In some cases, it's warranted, but make sure that you're pitching the right audience. Make sure that you're pitching places where you know that investors in hardware, right, hang out. If it's all software and B2C and all that kind of stuff, that's the wrong one, right? So you should definitely participate in pitch fest competitions. And how many people have been to a whole bunch of networking events like this, right? Yeah, everybody. And when you tell somebody your story, it's very common for you to say, this is my idea. And they're like, wow, yeah, this is really great. Do you know any investors that might be interested, right? That happens a lot, right? That's networking. But the problem is it's the shotgun approach, right? Because you're going to end up going down a whole bunch of dead end roads because you don't have a roadmap. You know, on a target list, you're walking into the Coringall Valley saying that we're going to capture X percent market share. And if you don't have a roadmap and you didn't do your homework, you're going to end up spending 6 months raising money and not getting a check. And that's why 85% fail. And that's why I'm here, is because I can help you with that. I don't want you to go down those dead end roads. So the prevailing theory in the entire entrepreneurial ecosystem globally is that startups are just chaotic and that's just the way it is and we just slug through it, right? It's not true. There is actually a repeatable process that I've used over and over for 25 years to close over $1 billion in deals, and it's the same exact process over and over and over again. Raising money is just like any other marketing campaign, but the product that you're selling is 20 to 30% of your company. Think about your fundraising as a marketing campaign where you're selling a product, right? And the product is a chunk of stock in your company. The idea that it's chaotic and you just kind of do the best you can and try to pitch 300 people, and on meeting number 301, they're going to write you a check. Don't waste your time doing that. That's why 85% fail. The reason process is so important is because as the CEO or the founder of your company, time is your most valuable asset, even more so than cash. Why? Because if I go spend $10,000 on advertising and I don't get the return I want, I could go get another $10,000. Now, there might be some dilution associated with it, but I can go get it, right? If you spend 10 hours of your time pitching the wrong people, you can't get it back. So the value of your time is extremely valuable. It's your most valuable asset. In fact, I sat down with one of our clients about 6 months ago, and we were talking about this conversation. I said, how much is your time worth? And let's take a little poll. So what do you guys think your time is worth as an entrepreneur if you're building a startup company? What do you think? Take a guess. What do you think? How much is your time worth? $250 an hour, okay? $2,500, okay? It's a good range. So we just did some napkin math. Let's say that you want to sell your company for $100 million. Let's call it 3 or 4 years from now, right? So the average employee works 2,080 hours a year, right? I know everybody's going to work above average, but just for the sake of argument, let's take a look at that, right? So if you take $100 million, you divide it by 3, divide it by 2,080, you get $16,000 per hour. Now, you may argue, well, yeah, that's fine, but then there's a team, so you have to divide by the number of team members. Okay, fine. Divide by 10, $1,600 an hour, right? The point is not the math. The point is that your time is worth somewhere between $1,600 and $16,000 an hour. So when you and your two co-founders are sitting and pitching somebody that doesn't understand your business, you just spent $16,000 times 3 and you can't get it back. So process, right? A repeatable process, right? And the whole idea is that just like any other product that you're selling, you build a target list. Before you start going and making a whole bunch of sales calls, what do good salespeople do? They qualify the customers, right? Same thing here. You're selling a product. Qualify your list before you go spending the time taking meetings and buying them lunch, right? And I'm just going to give you the bullet points now, but we've got a detailed roadmap, checklist, everything that you need to do, as well as a template for how to build your own target list, and we're going to talk about that. After you build a target list, the most important thing is warm introductions, and I'll tell you how to get those. Then you reach out to the investors. You send them emails, you call them, you try to get meetings. It's an ongoing campaign, right? Just like any other. Then you run a visibility campaign. I'll give you an example. We were pitching More David Al down in the valley, and it was our sixth meeting. And Josh Green is the partner that runs the clean tech practice. And we were going in for our sixth meeting, and we're actually meeting with the full partnership this time. And so Josh opens the door, and the CEO and I walk in, and he says, wow, like SG Biofuels, what is it about you guys? What is going on? Because I can't pick up a single trade magazine or trade website without seeing your name, SG Biofuels. And I was just like, oh my gosh, that is like the very best way to start a partner meeting at a venture capital fund, because guess what? You're the deal to get. This train is leaving the station whether you're on it or not. And by the way, hurry up because we have a meeting across the street with Sequoia in 30 minutes. So that creates FOMO, fear of missing out. That's how you get money from investors, is to understand that they have fears too, and their fear is missing out on the next Twitter. So be the next hot deal, right? Now, you can't bullshit your way there, right? It has to be real. but you do want to be visible, right? And then you want to create momentum, and we'll talk about that in more detail. So the very foundation of any good campaign is a target list of the smart money investors, right? So the wrong investors are people that don't understand your vertical market. If you're in hardware, don't pitch to people that are in medical devices. And if you're in medical devices, don't pitch people that do SaaS, right? Understand not only what they say they invest in, but what they actually invest in. If they haven't had any exits, maybe they've already made 15 bets in the hardware business, but they didn't actually get any exits. It's like, okay, so are they valuable? Yeah. But is there somebody else out there that has that experience and has assets that's more valuable? Again, remember the value of your time, $16,000. Choose wisely, right? If they haven't done any investments in your vertical, if you go out on Google and you say, okay, I just want to find all the people that invest in medical devices, or actually, more accurately, all the people that say that they invest in medical devices, right? And so you'll probably pull down a list of like 800 firms and there's no context, okay? You have to look for specific deals. And this is the biggest one, particularly with angel investors, if they're not actively writing checks. There's a whole bunch of people that are very wealthy, very intelligent, very nice, very well-intentioned, and they will say, yep, I'm an angel investor, and you're going to spend a bunch of time pitching them. And the reality of it is, they haven't written a check in the last 2 years. And the probability of them actually writing a check to your company in the next 6 to 12 months is very, very small. So here's one little tip. A very easy way, and a diplomatic and a polite way of doing this, is as you're having the conversation with them at the networking reception, wow, that's great, you're an angel investor, that's awesome. So tell me about the last deal that you wrote a check for and why you're excited about it. And then watch their face and watch their body reaction, right? You don't have to be rude, but because in fact, if the answer is they really haven't written a check recently, great, pivot the conversation into, okay, well, that's great. Like, who do you know in this industry that did invest in a recent deal, right? So you don't have to be rude and say, oh my gosh, you're a waste of my time. No. You're building relationships everywhere you go, right? But make sure that if you're going to take an hour or two or three to pitch people over and over again, that they are active check writers, right? The people that are not active check writers, I affectionately call them tire kickers, right? They're very nice people and they do want to help, right? But make sure that the help you're getting from them is introductions to people that are writing checks. So who are the right investors? As I mentioned, vertical market expertise, they have to know your business, and you can validate that by looking at the companies and roles that they played, whether they were an investor or if they were a member of the management team, which is always better. Successful exits, you can validate this on a variety of different databases. We subscribe to about 4 or 5 of them. Prior investments in the industry, insider relationships, insider knowledge, and recent checks written. If you're targeting people that have vertical market expertise, how do you make sure you're not giving information away to the competition, right? That's exactly why you have to do your homework. You have to look at the investments that they've already made and determine if there's anybody competitive in their portfolio, and then you will determine that will change if you approach them. It will change how you approach them as well. That's exactly why you have to do your homework up front. So if you get smart money investors, they're going to bring industry relationships to the table when it comes time to recruit people, your VP of sales and marketing, right? It's going to be a heck of a lot easier. And they know who the good channel partners are. And they know who to stay away from because they've already done business with them. They've learned lessons about how to take your company from 0 units to 10 million units on somebody else's nickel, and you can leverage that expertise. They can introduce you to companies that might acquire you because they've already sold them businesses before, right? Been there, done that, counts for a lot. So how do you find smart money investors? You build a target list, and it all starts with a market map of the relevant deals. I don't care if you have a list that says, here's 800 investors that say they invest in medical devices. What I care about is, here's the 10 deals that got done in the last 3 years that are comparable to mine, and now I'm going to work backwards, right? What I like to do is to reverse engineer your exit event. What I mean by that is, I want to help you raise this round of financing, but that's not all. I want to make sure that you get an exit and make enough money that you can choose when to do your next deal, who to do it with, and go sit on the beach for a few months and then come back, right? I want you to get an exit. I want you to be in the 15% of the companies that successfully return money to investors with an ROI, right? So most people work in an industry where multiple sectors are converging. Does that make sense? Right? Almost every startup is taking a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and we're blending it together in a unique way, right? Makes sense. That's why, partially why we do what we do. And here's an example of a company that we worked with in the marketing automation space. And so CRM software, integrating it with social media management, automating workflows, and your email tools, right? So 700 and some companies in this industry right now, right? They're bringing these tools together so you don't have to have one tool here, three tools there, three there, one or two here, right? They bring it all together under one roof, right? And they came to us and they said, do you know any investors that might be interested in our business? And I said, great, now we're going to do a little bit of research. And the first question I had was, who are the gorillas that are likely to buy your business at some point in the future, assuming that that's your exit plan? And we know that 95% of the exits are going to be by strategic acquisition, right? So the question is, who are the gorillas that are likely to buy this company? Well, of course, you're going to have, you know, Salesforce, Siebel, and Oracle in the CRM space. And let's start with the end in mind, right? You want to raise money now, and you probably want to sell it, right? Maybe the IPO, and that's great. What would be great is if you could actually have a bid from Google to buy your company and have the option of going public and have them negotiate against each other. That's fun. I've been down that road before, and that's a lot of fun. But let's assume that 99% of you are going to get a return on your investment by an acquisition. So who are the gorillas that are going to most likely buy your company? Because what we're going to do is we're going to start with the end in mind, and we're going to reverse engineer it. We're going to work backwards, right, to increase your chances of being in the 15% category. So who are the gorillas that are most likely to buy your business? Like Citigroup, American Express. So think about the gorillas. And I know every single one of you can think of four or five. Okay. So you're all looking for early stage investors, right? So the best way to find early stage investors who have been there and done that, meaning they've already had an exit, is you start with that sheet. And then the first thing I'm going to encourage you to do is let's go make a list of all of the companies that these people have acquired in the last 2 years. And so first we're going to say, okay, so in this example that I'm about to show you, Oracle bought a company in the marketing automation space. And way back here, they raised an early stage seed round from seven investors for about $3 million. And then they did a Series A for $5 million. And then they did a Series B for roughly $13 million. And then they did a Series C for 30-some million. Then they topped it off with a Series D for $40 million. And then they got acquired by Oracle, right? So that's the kind of deal pathway you guys are looking for, right? So you don't just want any investor. You want somebody that wrote a check here and exited over here for $1.2 billion. Because when is the best time to ask an investor for money? When they have it. If they just got 100 times their money on a deal in your industry, they're fat and happy. And you come along and say, hey, how'd you like to do that again? That's a meeting that you will get. So I'm going to show you the specific example. So for the marketing automation vertical, and that's why what you've started today on your sheet is a starting point for this. So we sat down with this company, and we started with the Oracle, the SAP, the Salesforce, blah, 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 right? And then you do the same thing for all of these, but after you put a few hours of time into this sheet, not only do you have four or five potential buyers of your business 4 years from now, you've got 50. Well, 48. But now, like, this is the landscape, right? This is the Marine Corps battlefield, right? These people are either going to be your buyers, or your competitors, or your strategic channel partners, right? So guess what? When you go hire your VP of business development and your first salesperson, they're going to say, oh my gosh, this is awesome. Thank you, right? Because they're going to run with that. And when you raise your $10 million round of financing and you're ready to go hire six new senior level executives and your recruiter says, well, where should we recruit out of? You're going to whip this list out. So not only are you going to get value for putting in, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10 hours of research to fill this out, you're going to get it now, but you're going to use this all the way through the time that you sell your company to Oracle for $879 million. This is the deal I was talking about, right? The transactions go from bottom up, right? So they raised a seed round in 2004, roughly $3 million from these seven individuals. If you are in the marketing automation space and you're looking for early stage investors, these seven names are absolute gold to you. Because when you're going to that networking meeting and there's 250 people there and everybody's drinking martinis and you're like, do you know any marketing automation investors? How about you whip out a list that says, do you know any of these seven people? Can you make a warm introduction, right? That's a good use of your time, right? Make sense? Awesome. So they raised $3 million, right? Then they go on to do a Series A for $5 million led by Brad Woolison at JMI Equity. So when we do this research methodology, we don't just find out who the firm was, we find out who the partner was. Just happens to be a San Diego firm. And I know these guys. So then they turn around and raise roughly $13 million from JMI Equity, and guess what? Bay Partners joined, right? And then they did a $23 million round, and these guys ponied up, and Bessemer came in, right? And then they went public, and then they got acquired by Oracle for $879 million. So if you're in the marketing automation space, and you want early stage investors who have been there and done that before, and like, oh man, it would be so great if we could get an introduction to JMI Equity, right? I know seven people who have a really good relationship with them. And these guys and gals are a lot easier to get to than this one and this one and this one. So you get the right people down here and they will filter up. Because these, I promise, these people are best buddies. They made $879 million together. They know each other well, right? So that's the best way, bottom up. And it doesn't just work. This methodology, this process, right? Remember, trust the process because your time is valuable. This methodology is not just valuable for the gigantic $800 million deals. It equally qualifies for companies like, I think some of the best deals out there are the ones where you raise $3 to $5 million and you sell it for maybe $50, $75, $100 million, right? Those are excellent deals. And you will not see them on the front cover of TechCrunch. But if I can put $2 million in and get $20 million out in 2 years, I don't care about the front page of TechCrunch. I'll take 10 or 20 times my money all day long. You can forget the newspaper, right? Here's a perfect example. Milo, right? They're in the e-commerce space. So a company came to us, same exact thing. Hey, we're in the e-commerce space and we got this great new thing and we're looking for early stage investors. Do you know any early stage investors in e-commerce? I'm like, great, let's sit down and do some research, right? We have a process. Again, remember, same process, rinse and repeat. And when you use this for your angel round, you're gonna use it again for your A round, you're gonna use it again for your B round, and you can use the same exact process for selling your company for $879 million, right? Some people call it investment banking. I call it smart common sense, right? So, Milo, they raised just under $1 million from these people here. And then they raised $4 million from all of these people. And then they sold for $75 million in cash to eBay, 2 years from beginning to end. So Keith Raboy puts in angel money. He sells it. So they all in a little bit shy of $5 million. Within 2 years, they take out $75 in cash. That's roughly 12 plus times your money in 2 years. When was the last time you got 12x your money out of an investment in the stock market? That's a hell of a good deal, right? These things happen all the time. You don't have to be a billion-dollar unicorn in order to have value. Don't buy into this methodology that, well, if you're not a billion-dollar unicorn, then you can't raise money. That might be true for some investors, but I promise you there's a whole bunch of investors that would love to have a deal like this. You just have to know where to look. So the question is, some angels have dry powder, some can wait a long time and some can't. That's exactly why you have to do research, because some of them do have what you described and some of them actually have a syndicate where they've got 10 other investors with them. So they can extend that, right? Some of them have a 2-year timeline, some of them have a 7-year timeline, right? If you talk to them and you do a little bit of research, you ask around, you're going to find out that information. So you're right. Not all angel investors are created equally, which is even further to the point of do your research, follow the process, right? So when we do this, we sit down and we scrub down like 200 investors. So like what we'll do is we'll cherry pick maybe a dozen deals. Remember the deals? So you got your market map, you got your gorillas, right? And then you go find a list of all the companies that they acquired in the last couple of years, and you're going to get a big list of companies, right? Well, you're not going to go research every one of them. It doesn't make sense, right? But you cherry pick 10 or 12 of them. And then you look at those 10 or 12 and you look at the complete deal breakdown of them just like this, right? And after you spend, I don't know, 10 or 20 hours of doing research over maybe a 1 month period, right? You're going to come up with all these, but what you're going to do is you're going to rank them A, B, and C because you're going to scrub them all down. Because again, what are we doing? Sales and marketing, we're qualifying our list, right? And so we put together this whole thing, and then the green highlight are the ones that are the best. This is our short list. This is the product of doing a little bit of research up front, is a short list of smart money investors that bring more than just cash to the table, that have been there and done that, and they will accelerate your business, literally catapult you into the big leagues. They're going to open doors that you can't open for yourself. They're going to be able to bring the Series A and the Series B investors to the table at the right time. Why? Because you know, based on your research, that they've already done deals with them. So when you go to those networking meetings where there's 200 people in the room, literally print this out and have it in your pocket. And remember I said, ask them, hey, tell me about your last investment and why you're so excited about it. And they're like, oh, well, you know, it's been a little while. You can say, great. Do you know anybody on this list? Whip it out. Show it to them. Ask them to open up their LinkedIn. Because usually what happens is, this happens like attorneys go to those things all the time, right? I go to them a lot of times, right? And if you ask me, do you know anybody in e-commerce? You know, like I'm going to think about my LinkedIn database, right? And I got 9,000 connections. And I don't know about you guys, but my personal brain just doesn't have that much RAM. But if you give me a list and maybe you just show me the top five, or I'll just skim that and I could, oh yeah, actually, I know Somesh, right? Like I spoke on a panel with him 3 months ago, right? That is smart money fundraising, right? That shows a level of sophistication. You're demonstrating to investors that you're not using the shotgun approach. And there's a lot of investors that say, if you can't find a way to get a warm introduction to me, like just one lawyer or one person that did business with me, it says a lot to me about the way you're going to go get customers. It's not very creative. It's not very resourceful. And that, believe it or not, is one of the filters that they use. So getting warm introductions is critical, and we have an entire module on specifically how to do that. But the best way to get a warm introduction is to print this out, stick it in your pocket, and take it with you everywhere you go, and work this list of 20. Instead of using the shotgun approach and going out there and doing pitch fest competitions, just asking people and asking people and asking people, do you know anybody? Do you know anybody? Whip out this list and say, do you know these people? Much more efficient. So does it work? Well, for management teams that I've been a part of, as we talked about, 8 companies, 6 exits, 75%. Of the people that have gone through our programs, 70% of them have raised capital, and actually several of them are negotiating term sheets right now. We've brought 60 companies through some of our programs, 4 cohorts. We have additional cohorts coming through, but that's the presentation on how you do smart money fundraising. That's how you speed up the process. The reason it speeds it up is because although you're going to do at least 10 or so hours of research, right, what you're going to eliminate from the process is all of those meetings that you're having right now with investors that you have to explain what your business does. Those are a waste of your time because they're not going to write a check. And your time is much better spent working this list.